Now, are you already planning this year's holiday? Maybe you've already booked. Well, if you're anything like me, you'll be going for a beachside holiday, a comfortable hotel, a choice of mouth-watering foods and a good supply of alcoholic beverages. But maybe your adventurous streak has only taken you to the latest terrifying ride at the Disney Adventure Park. But I wonder if you've ever considered doing something truly bizarre. Well, my guest today has really gone overboard in that respect. He's gone whitewater rafting in Colorado, taken himself to the North Pole, not a lot of sun there, and tried his hand at the Cresta Run in St. Moritz. But if you're thinking that this is something to be attempted only by the most intrepid, I can tell you that this guy describes himself as, quote, a nervous man. Anyway, welcome Tony Fosgate to Phoenix FM.
Hi Scott, thanks for inviting me.
It's our pleasure. Now, first off, I should explain that I met Tony on a course we were both doing in Southend on radio presenting some years ago. I chose the easy option of staying on the radio, but Tony took a very different route. So first off, Tony, I've got to ask you, why?
Well, I'm not sure radio it isn't the easy option, actually, not the way that I did it anyway, but that's another
it's
story.
Well, the way I do it isn't probably the easy option.
No,
either.
you make it sound very easy, I must say. I guess, though, I mean, we're all looking for different challenges and new experiences, and a lot of us work in an office in front of a computer all day. We're beset by health and safety regulations and all the rules and regulations, and I think a lot of us want to escape, especially nowadays. I've always been interested in travel, and a few years ago, one of the modern curses of the working world is you're made redundant at some point in your life.
Yep.
And so a few years ago, I was made redundant, and I had been savings. I know not everyone has those, but I'd saved up a bit, and I thought, well, okay, I wanted to travel. I'm going to see a bit of the world now. And I did what a lot of people do when they get to a certain stage in their life. They make a list. I don't think you've ever done that, but I think a lot of people
truthfully
have.
No, I haven't.
Well, maybe you're a bit unusual then, because a lot of people sort of make a list and they decide, well, what do I want to do? What are the sort of things that things I haven't done yet in my life, adventurous things?
Yep.
What do I want to do? So I made a list. And I had all sorts of things on it, places I wanted to travel, things that I wanted to do. And I thought, well, for example, where's the farthest you can go? And going north, it's got to be the North Pole, of course. Whitewater rafting is the biggest roller coaster ride that you can think of.
Imagine it would be.
And you think, what is the most ridiculously dangerous thing you can do lying on your stomach? And that's the Cresta Run. So I ought to explain that the Cresta Run is the kind of forerunner of the Bob Skeleton. If you imagine anyone has seen the Winter Olympics, and we're very good at this now. We win Olympic medals at this. But it essentially, it's something the size of a tea tray that you lie on your stomach, and you go down an ice run. And I have to say, of all the things that I did, that really was the most truly terrifying.
It sounds insane.
And I want to explain that I'm not a particularly skilled or courageous person. I say in the book that competence, I think, is overrated. And the thing is that nowadays, you can do that sort of thing. A few decades ago, you wouldn't have been able to do what the sort of the pioneers of these sort of adventurous activities do now. And a lot of it, I suppose, is to do with sort of modern technology and that sort of thing. I mean, people spent centuries, you know, in the frozen race of the Arctic trying to reach the North Pole and then dying. Now, nowadays we fly there in one day with a selfie stick to actually take pictures of ourselves for, you know, to download for Facebook. And the same with the Grand Canyon, you know, the when you think about whitewater rafting, it's quite a recent activity. You know, for many years, sort of the pioneers of whitewater rafting went down the Colorado, and they did it without the sort of the inflatable rafts that we have now. They went down in sort of wooden boats. and a lot of them without life jackets. I mean, there's a famous occasion of one of the white water rafters, the original pioneers, going down the Colorado, and he was given the option of a life jacket, but he said, well, or a bottle of whiskey, and he said, well, I'll take a bottle of whiskey with me. So that's the sort of thing. So it's an interesting thing to do, and I think a lot of us have an adventurous streak, and I think we ought to let it out, take it for a walk.
Okay, now, not only have you done all these daredevil activities, but you've also written a book about it. I have to start by saying it's a damn fine read, most amusing. Was this your first attempt at writing?
That's very kind of you.
No, it's
yes,
absolutely.
I hope it doesn't show rate. That it's my first adventure in writing. I've always been interested in writing, and so I decided, well, I've done all these things, and some of them a few years ago, so I get the old memory going and think I'm going to write something about it.
And when you did that, was it just to decide that you would have something to look back on later, or did you have another ulterior motive to put it all together?
You're right. When you write about these, I wanted some sort of record so I wouldn't forget of some of these activities. But I also thought there's a lot of books out there which are very serious about adventure sports and how-to books, and that's not me. I mean, this is a story about an ordinary bloke who tries some of the so-called dangerous things, and I bumble my way through it. And it takes a kind of a wry and a bit of a funny look at adventure travel in general. I mean, the other thing about writing is that, of course, it allows you to relive your experience and then think about it a bit more in a bit more depth. I mean, it gave me the chance to dig a bit deeper into the background of the sort of the people and places where I went and the history that I don't think I really appreciated at that time. I mean, there's a section, for example, in the book on the original river runners of the Colorado. Mm-hmm. And, you know, some great characters there. And, you know, if you think that I did something dangerous, then what they did was almost suicidal. the other kind of story is of how we got to the North Pole, because, I mean, it's interesting to note that we didn't get to the North Pole until at least... on the surface to the North Pole until about 1968, mm-hmm. when you think we got to the South Pole on foot, and that was, 1912, wasn't it, that we got mm-hmm. there. So that's an interesting kind of tale, especially about the late 19th and early 20th century, then a lot of adventurers tried to get to the North Pole. Mm-hmm. I mean, some of them were bona fide explorers. Others, to be honest, were practically con men. They basically made up where they'd been and they never got there. And I suppose the other sort of contemporary issue about these places is the impact of climate change.
Yeah.
And visiting these places, you really do see that. I mean, the southwest of the United States, there really is a water shortage problem. I mean, if I tell you that the lower reaches of the Colorado now never get to the sea at all, but by that time, basically, we've sucked all the water out of it. And, of course, the ice cap at the North Pole has shrunk as well. So I wanted to include something about that in the book. That's a serious bit. The rest of it is me making a fool of myself.
All right. Now, there's no way we could do justice to your brainchild in one session. So perhaps today we could start by looking at the Whitewater Rapids and what kind of craft you're in and how far you actually travel.
Sure. Well, I mean, if you're going to go whitewater rafting, one of the best places to do it is in the southwestern USA. Mm-hmm. And that's in the kind of the Canyonlands area where I went. So if you imagine, this is very dry desert country. It's like a plateau, which has been lifted up over millions of years. Mm-hmm. And you've got the River Colorado sort of cutting through it. And it's kind of carving down into the landscape like a knife. So over the years, it's created the Grand Canyon, mm-hmm. and it's created many other canyons in that area, mm-hmm. Each with its own sort of wild water, mm-hmm. because basically you have got deep canyons and you have got boulders littering the bottom of the canyon, and that creates the sort of the white water. I mean, the scenery is absolutely amazing. If you've ever seen any of the photos of the Grand Canyon, mm-hmm. You'll have an idea of the sheer scale of it, although it's difficult to see the sheer scale of it. Mm. And basically, you have to be there. I mean, we're talking about sort of an area half the size of Texas. Mm-hmm. And it is a real wilderness area. So you're drifting down by canyon walls, which may be up to 2,000 feet high above you. And it's a kind of a desolate place. So you're on the river, and the river is really the only source of life and water. So the bit of the river that I chose was known as Cataract Canyon. Mm-hmm. So you can see from the name what it says. It kind of does what it says on the tin.
Basically. Yeah. And how far is that? About 14 miles?
In fact, the stretch, including Cataract Canyon, went down was about 100 miles down there. So it's about a three-day trip on a raft. But Cataract Canyon is kind of notorious for white water. Mm-hmm. There's an international scale of river difficulty, which ranges up to 5. And Cataract Canyon scores basically between 3 and 5. Mm. So you can't get any more terrifying than that, really. And it's especially difficult because the river does drop down precipitously, and there's many, many boulders on it. Some of them the size of buses on the riverbed, and they sort of cut up all the water and create the sort of the white water. So if you kind of imagine or try and imagine, there's about 1/3 of a million gallons of water every second flowing down this river, and you're on a small raft and you're going down with it. And you're running 28 sets of rapids. The other thing about Cataract Canyon is that it also has some really big water features there. I mean, we're talking about large sort of whirlpools and that sort of thing that you're going down the raft in. And they've all got their particular names. I mean, there's one is called Little Niagara, which gives you an idea.
Yeah.
That's created like a pour over of water. So your raft goes down there and it swirls round this particular feature, Little Niagara. There was another one recently that's now been washed downstream called the Claw, which is particularly notorious for sort of ripping up boats. It was also known, well, controversially, as the mother-in-law. But the most notorious of them all is Satan's Gut. And Satan's Gut is a kind of a spinning a whirlpool in the middle of the river, and that's where a lot of people come a cropper. So river folks say that what goes into the gut rarely comes out, and if it does, it's not in good shape. And people have lost their lives. Probably most of the lives that have been lost in that stretch of the river have been rafts which have capsized and people who have sort of fallen into the gut. And it's a kind of a spinning, sucking whirl of water which kind of retains people in it. So it's not a good place to be. So
certainly it would be.
A lot of the book, or the first section of it, is leading up to meeting the gut. And once you've met the gut and you've seen it and you've gone past it, then you're very wet and you're a bit traumatised. Basically, it's a good day in the office if you don't get sucked into it.
Now, in your book, you describe the dire warnings issued by the pilot in charge of the trip, who's clearly got a lot of experience at the issues that can occur. But he's standing on the craft the whole time. I've got to ask you, what happens if he gets thrown over the side?
Well, yes. So fortunately, that didn't happen. Mm-hmm. And obviously, that wouldn't be a very good thing to happen. So before you go down the rapids, basically, you get a briefing from the pilot. Uh-huh. And essentially, what the pilot will tell you is that there are 3 rules to whitewater rafting.
Yep.
Number 1, stay on the boat. Number 2, don't leave the boat. And number 3, don't even think of getting off the boat. And that's basically the briefing that you're given, and that's really good advice. You really want to hang on to the raft. If you go over the side of the raft, then you run the rapids in your life jacket, and that's a position that you don't really want to be in. If you do that, the advice is to adopt what they call the downrivers swimmer's position, in which case you pretend you're in your favourite armchair and you lean back, you draw your knees up, and you point your toes skywards.
Yep.
So that if you bash into any rocks on the way down, your feet act like shock absorbers.
Right. So how safe is it? Well, the whole, doing this.
Well, putting it into context, I mean, millions of people go rafting every year, and only about 6 to 10 people on the commercial trips lose their lives. Yeah. I mean, the commercial trips are highly regulated, and they have an enviable safety record. So you're pretty safe on it, but there's right. nothing is without risk. I mean, in fact, one time, State Commission report, using the latest statistical analysis, came to the conclusion that bowling was more dangerous than whitewater rafting.
And that was a
That was a kind of a PR stunt. I mean, that's kind of nonsense in a way, because, as I say in the book, there's statistics and damn lies. So the idea that bowling is less dangerous than whitewater rafting is ridiculous. But then, you know, there are a lot of statistics which can show you that things are risky. It's risky to stay at home, for example. I mean, about 18,000 yes. people die and 21 million require medical attention every year from home-related accidents.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, in the UK alone, 3,000, almost 4,000 men and women attend hospital for an accident with their trousers, for example.
Right, we won't go there.
Which about 500 men a year require emergency treatment through mishaps with their zips. So staying at home doesn't necessarily get you out of a risky situation. I think in the end, people don't look at statistics before they go on these sort of trips. What they think about is whether they want to do it. Is it exciting enough? And if it's exciting enough, it's well worth the risk, and people do it. And I think that's how people think about these things.
Now, clearly, this sort of vacation, I'm deliberately not using the word holiday, isn't for everyone, is it?
No, but you'd be surprised. I mean, when I was on the raft, I mean, there was a mother with two teenage kids on it. I suppose the age range would probably be from about 16 to middle age. One of the greatest commercial river runners, who was called Georgie White, who I do talk about in my book, was taking trips down the rapids in her 80s and steering rafts down the rapids. So I think if you want to see some spectacular scenery and experience the wilderness and have some thrills along the way, then and you've got a kind of adventurous streak, then I think you should go for it. I mean, you can always lie on the beach, but would you really want to do that?
Well, look, Tony, we're going to have to ask you to come back and tell us a little bit more about your adventures at North Pole and the Cresta Run. But in the meantime, you've got to give us details of the book, where you can lay your hands on it, copy, price, etc.
Okay, so the book's called Satan's Gut, Sausage Boats and Ice Kisses, The Adventure Travel Notes of a Nervous Man. It's out on Amazon now. Paperback is $8.99. Kindle version is $2.99. So if you just look in Amazon under Adventure Travel or just type in Satan's Gut, and you should be able to find it.
Well, as I said at the start of our chat, it's a thoroughly good read, and it's guaranteed to get you out of yourself.
Thank you.
There's a lot of humour in there, and who knows, it might just encourage you to spread your wings and follow in Tony's footsteps. Anyway, thanks for coming in, Tony. Look forward to your return on the second part of your exploits. But right now, it's time for this.